So tonight we are back aboard Deep Space Nine, and it's the first year and the 10th or 11th episode, depending on how you count these things. It's the Nagus.
It was a potential that this could have been really, truly shit, because it's a series one episode of DS9, you know. And the batting average ain't great. However, we have somehow managed to set upon one of the five decent episodes of the first series, and I thought this was an absolute delight.
Yeah, I thought this was really terrific fun. So the other ones, when we were talking just now off mic, the other ones were, I said Duet,
Emissary,
Progress, In the Hands of the Prophets, you said, and this one.
Yeah, pretty much they're like the big hitters. Maybe Vortex as well, the Odo one.
Yeah, Vortex
isn't bad.
That's
pretty good. Otherwise, we've got a lot of sub sort of TNG episodes, Move Along Home. The one, what's the one where all of their, Dramatis Personae.
Oh, God, yes.
Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, very well, sadly. But I think this is really, really very good. And it's not obvious. Like, if you were watching Emissary, I don't think you would have predicted that we would start to have episodes, you know, on Star Trek The Next Generation, you'll have a Geordi episode or a Data episode or something like that. And so maybe we could guess that everyone in the opening credits would get their own episode. There'd be an episode called Dax, for instance, that was about Dax. And here we have our big Quark episode, and it actually sort of experiments with something that is going to be a mainstay of the show, which is Quark and his kind of gang of various Ferengi that we meet over the years, including Wallace Shawn as Zek.
I mean, this is basically a test that you're right for sort of subgenre of Ferengi episodes that we're going to get, which, you know, I'll be honest, are divisive. Some people absolutely love them and other people just can't bear them. And I get that, you know, like really when you're looking at Star Trek, you're not going for sort of cartoon characters bumbling about, you know, talking about profit. And but it,
well,
I think
I
it's written very.
I am.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe you are. At its best, it's really sharp, really clever comedy. At its worst, it's profit and lace, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, we had the two sort of House of Quark episodes, you know, that one and the sequel that we've both done. And those aren't Ferengi heavy in particular. They're Quark heavy.
But you got ones later on like Little Green Men and The Magnificent Ferengi. And I think they're just sublime, those episodes.
Yeah.
There are sort of ones which fall in the middle. There's one in series three called Prophet. No, I'll give it, I can't remember what it's called.
There is a Profit and Loss, isn't there?
Not this one. It's the one where the Nagus makes contact with the wormhole aliens and he comes DS9 and he's been turned like really good and benevolent and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And that one is a bit hit and miss. And there's some ones set on Ferenginar as well where it just feels like an episode of The Simpsons, you know?
It's like, right. I mean, this is a little bit different from those in that they've only given the A plot to the Ferengi and then there's a really strong B plot, which I think is beautiful, like just like very affecting.
Very well judged with a really, very gentle, but very effective payoff.
And so with the time split between those plots, it just feels like hanging around on the station for 45 minutes having fun. And, like, I think that's superb. I'm absolutely here for that.
Because this is absolutely a phrase that you have coined. You have a habit of doing this on podcasts, you know, of coining phrases which then other people start to nick. And hang time is a great description to put at DS9, because I think you could probably look at about half the episodes of DS9 and just title them Hang Time on the Station, because that's basically what they are. But I think the characters have to be, well, the characters have to be very strong in order for that to be effective. And the setting has to be interesting as well. And I think DS9 scores in both of those categories. I would like to talk to you about Wallace Shawn.
Yeah.
Who I've only seen him in a couple of things and I know he's had a huge career and he's done, like you were mentioning a few bits you'd seen him in.
Oh, well, obviously he's in Princess Bride, you know, which is terribly important and quotable. But I've mentioned before that my husband watched Young Sheldon and I would wander in the room and sort of sit down for a bit and he was sort of binging it over a period of time. And Wallace Shawn's in that and he combines being a funny sitcom character with being kind of genuine and likable and sort of sweet. And here he gets to be a bit naughtier than that.
Oh, so, so kinky, isn't he? Honestly. Yeah.
Well, it's one
he's
of those
dirty
things.
Old man. You know?
He really is. But it's one of those things where you think, holy crap, you know, it's like we've got Louise Fletcher, Academy Award winner Louise Fletcher as a semi-regular character. We've got Wallace Shawn here as a semi-regular character.
Yeah. And as they go along, they total up more and more and more until you've got this enormous cast. Okay, so Shawn was brought in for this role. And interestingly, Armin Shimerman was a little bit concerned because he thought like Shawn might take it too over the top. I mean, I don't think he was entirely wrong. It's a little bit over the top. But David Livingston, who is responsible for the story here, not the teleplay, that's Ira Stephen Bear. And he directed this episode as well, David Livingston says, in my fabulous book from the latest charity shop haul, Captain's Logs, Shawn was brilliant. It was Rick's idea to offer the part to Wally Shawn, and I complimented him at the end of the show. I said to Wally, you are a totally fearless actor. You went for it and you didn't hold anything back. When he did his first scene, he didn't even know what a Ferengi was. I kept saying, more, more, bigger, bigger. Let me tell you when it's too big. I never told him to put back. After he got the initial thing down, he sat on a stool at Quark's, which was the first scene we shot. And the moment he opened his mouth, the whole stage lit up and the cast was cracking up. The cast still quotes lines from the show with his inflection. Whenever someone makes a mistake on set, we'll say, and you failed. Miserably! it was a comedy and having him and Armin together was a treat for me. I mean, it paid off, didn't it? It was a risky cast and it paid off because he's back again and again.
Yes. Yeah, I know. It's fantastic. And, you know, he has his own kind of storylines and things. I think, you know, and it all starts here. I don't think this is where it ends up going. I think this is a little bit thinner than we normally get.
I think it's a bit darker as well in places.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. And he's given a bit more of a nuanced performance than what he lands on, ultimately.
Yeah.
Which just to come in and just belt out
cartoon
fantastic
gnome
one-liners. Yeah. Lines like, was it, boys, together we're going to retake an empire or die in the attempt. You
know? It's so great.
He's amazing.
He's so funny.
Well, should we watch him in action?
I think we should. So I'm going to count us in. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and we're off.
I mean, this basically had to work, didn't it? Otherwise, we never would have had Ferengi episodes again after this.
No, that's right. You know, presumably we would have had Quark episodes. So here, this makeup is clearly cast off Nog or something. Like, he looks really familiar. But he's Eric Trump, isn't he? He's like he's Zek's large adult son.
He's the biggest. Thick. He casts a very long shadow, Nathan.
it's all that stuff about my father. You know, Eric Trump's always saying that. My father invented beetroot.
This bit,
I do too.
Cisco comes in. He's got all this exciting news. I'm going to take
you
to the fire
cave. Look at this business. This is a little kid. He's like, he's playing 14. I don't know how old he is. He's tiny. Like, he ends up being much taller than Avery.
Brooks, yeah.
And like, there's a little bit of business where he puts his shoe on the wrong foot and then gets exasperated and then puts it on the right foot because he's in such a hurry. And you know, he knows his father's coming. And I think he just sells it. He's so good. You know, child actors don't have to be good.
I don't want to criticize his career post DS9, but I haven't seen him do an awful lot, which is a shame, you know, because the best of his episodes, The Visitor and All the Battle to the Strong, he's giving like astonishingly good performances.
But I really buy him here, you know, like he's really selling.
There's something
about this character.
These early Jake and Nog subplots that I just adore. It really feels like Hang Time on the Station. It's before we've gone sort of galactic politics and we're just
and
hanging with the
Starfleet
kids, you know?
And all of that. Well, I think too, the other thing is that this is a very kind of standard sitcom plot, which is, you know, the father dealing with his son growing up and becoming a teenager and becoming independent and being worried about how that will turn out. Look at the pecking order here. So Quark is yelling at Rom, and Rom has given back some lost money to some Darbo girl or something, or some woman. And then, oh, here's the first rule of acquisition. Is this our
Once
first mention of the rules?
Once you have their money, you never give it back. I think it is. It certainly ain't the last. And I'll tell you now, that's another thing they merchandised episode. Eventually.
Yeah, there's a book. Yeah. So and now... And now Rom, who is a bit darker than he lands on, I think. You know, he's the lovable goofball
whole first
in Series 7.
They tweak him in Series 2.
Yeah, make him more kind of goofy. But here we get now he is bullying Nog about being at school. But there's something sort of slightly horrible about this bit. Do you know what I mean? It's still delivered in that Rom way and it's still sort of slightly comedic, but the idea is he doesn't want him going to school. What the hell is that? What do they say in that fucking shop there?
I don't know, but I thought that was a lovely shot going up. Because it's just nothing about the episode, is it?
They're selling freeze-dried dinosaurs in that shop on the promenade over there.
Oh, I love this line. Do you know what? There's a couple of times when they do this with Quark ending a filthy joke. And this time it's, your brother? I thought it was your wife. And there's one in Series 4 where he goes, and he said, that's not my antenna.
But we actually heard Morn laugh there.
Yes,
like Morn actually laughs.
You hear him.
Right?
The only time.
And what's he called? He's a
Lemurian. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And
oh my
they
God.
Never talk on Discovery. We have them on Discovery, God. But they never talk.
That makeup.
Here he is, Wallace Shawn.
You can only imagine Wallace Shawn's face when he was presented with that.
Well, he's kind of funny looking. Like, he is a comedy character actor. He is sort of funny looking, but this is really grotesque.
Nathan, he don't look nothing like that.
No, that is true.
And you know what? He's got the most astonishing ear hair coming up.
Yeah.
Later on, he gets a brush and he just starts like grooming it. Like, he's really sexy, you know?
It's so great. So he's here to experience Quark's porn collection.
Well,
on
that's
the
sort of a side issue, isn't it? He does have a real reason for being here.
Oh, yeah. But essentially, we're starting off with porn. Is that right?
And this is a running thread in Quark's throughout all the seasons.
People fuck on the holodeck.
And, you know,
in the holosuites.
I'm just going to say this.
Well, we know
I'm not
what
Riker
uses the holosuite holodeck for.
I think it's more salacious than TNG would ever be.
Oh, yeah.
There's sort of an acceptance of debauchery in Quark's that you would never get in 10 forward.
Isn't there something in Lower Decks about how disgusting it is to clean out the holodecks because everyone fucks on them?
I'm the one who has to clean the walls when they're done. Oh, my word. Who would want that job? I mean, maybe I shouldn't go here, but, you know, in those gay saunas, you know, someone's got to do that job.
Yeah, that's true.
That's someone's role this very second.
They probably have a hose. They probably hose things down.
These titles, Nathan, are so stately.
So
honestly.
Boring, aren't they?
Do you know what? Yeah. I could use this as like, you know, sort of meditative exercise to fall asleep to, these titles. I don't think that was the effect they were going for, you know.
No. I think the music is really good. Like, I think, is it the best 90s Trek theme?
It's
apart from Faith of the Heart, obviously.
You are a bad man. It's it's nice.
I think it probably
is. I prefer when it's jazzed up, and I know you prefer it here.
Yeah, well, I mean, it has to be jazzed up because the show changes, but when it's a lonely outpost on the distant fringes of the galaxy, this is actually quite nice, I think.
Actually, it does express that, doesn't it? Did you ever see the original designs, some of the original designs for DS9 when it was going to be a Starfleet base? Oh my God, that looks so boring. It's just like your stock Starfleet base. Then they took upon, yeah, we'll make it Cardassian with set in Bajor, and they did it as a complete circle. So the pylons all touched, and they were like, this ain't working. And eventually someone went, well, let's just take the top off and the bottom off. And they were like, there you go. They wanted something that when you saw it, you knew immediately that's Deep Space Nine and no other show. And I think they succeeded at that.
Well, I mean, that's what they did with the original Enterprise. All right. So I'm a school teacher and I am going to say that O'Brien is really shit at this. And it's not a very convincing schoolroom in the future.
I do like the thread of this, though, that they run through the first couple of seasons. It's nicer when it's Keiko, and it's brilliantly done in the hands of the prophets, where Kai Wynn walks in and says, you're committing
What's
blasphemy.
What's creationism taught in school? Yeah, so... and there is something here, too, where, like... there's something about how racist towards Ferengis human beings are.
Yeah, and that is a problem.
Yeah, we get it from Sisko. And one of the things I think that informs Sisko's reaction to Jake at the end is that he said, no, humans and Ferengis tend not to get on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is Starfleet. We should be trying to get on. And so he's a little bit abashed, I think.
There was a very anti-Ferengi feeling in TNG because they were supposed to be the villains when they first came
in. Yeah,
they
were going to be the season one big bad.
They're fucking ridiculous. We can't go with this.
Shimmerman in rompers with those sort of big ears and stuff. And they kind of went, actually, no.
But do you know, they address it. What you just said, that point about Starfleet being racist about Ferengis, they address it in the Jem Hadar at the end of season two.
Yeah,
and Quark gets this massive
superb speech
where he says, you don't like Ferengis and you know, you're happy to tell us, and yet you're in this amazing, tolerant federation of planet. It's a great thing.
It's
and
really
Quark gets
good.
Lots of like, you remember the bit in Way of the Warrior? It's so bubbly and cloy, just like the Federation.
Yeah.
He is critical of the Federation a lot, and I think with good reason.
But here Jake is friends with Nog. He's not reaching out or anything like that. They genuinely like each other and they hang out together. And that's better than Sisko has managed and the Federation has managed with the Ferengi generally. And so look how little he is.
I've got to say, though, O'Brien's not the most compassionate or tolerant of men.
I wouldn't pick him
to be a supply teacher in a million years.
Yeah, it's his wife's nepotism.
Oh, look at that drink there. What's that?
Yeah,
a silken sunrise, I think. What is it about the guest characters on 90s Trek having these enormous but silent keepers that come with them?
Is like Mr. Hom, only for the Nagus.
But the way he says his
someone
name.
Called Tiny Ron.
Hey, Hardu! Later on in the episode where he can't walk and he's got his arm around him and he's having to scoot really low. It's such a funny visual. So Quark's scared, isn't he, that the Nagus has realised his incredible success having a bar so close to the wormhole that he's going to come in and nab it off him.
Yeah, yeah.
But his plans are bigger than that.
And sillier. Much sillier. And much more involved.
Here we go.
There he is. So this is our first proper look at him, isn't it?
Yeah. His first line is him going, good program.
Yeah,
My father needs a rest.
Imagine. See, the my father, every my father line, I'm imagining Eric Trump saying it. Because he is also useless, isn't he? Like, he is a fucking idiot. What's his name?
Cracks.
He's
terrified
an idiot,
as well.
Like
when
Eric
he says,
Trump.
I'm not going to be the Nagus anymore. He's like, I'm not as greedy as I used to be. Yes, you are. More so.
I love that line. I love that I'm not as greedy as I used to
look.
Be.
See,
I think that's so
they've
funny.
They've been listening to your criticisms of the Juddery lift, so they're trying to repair it for you.
Oh, they're
right?
fixing it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I don't know. Like, they have holodecks. Why don't they have, like, a giant, you know, they all go onto the holodeck and they're in a classroom full of other children who are in a classroom.
No idea.
It just seems
You know, come Series 7, they kind of abandon that lift a bit and they just beam into ops, which is kind of what they should be doing, really.
Well, it's hard to tell what's cheaper and what isn't. The lift is not great, though. But, yeah, look, he's O'Brien being racist about Nog.
Yeah. separating from your son.
Yeah, wanting to separate, you know.
Like the whole point of the Federation is supposed to be a mixture of cultures that are learning from each other.
Yeah. And like the reason that Sisko doesn't do it isn't because of that, isn't because we should be making cross-cultural connections. It's because he knows that in a face-off he'd lose because Jake is a teenage boy, you know. Yeah. They want to
O'Brien's going, oh, sort of, I doubt that would happen, sir. You know, I'm really, your daughter's quite young. But you know what's really interesting is in series 6, where Nog is a commissioned officer, there's a scene between Nog and O'Brien where he goes, no, you're gonna have to start calling me sir. Like, that's how much Nog has developed in this series. Oh, did you notice when Tiny Ron was eating the worms, whatever they're called?
Yeah.
He's eating the only one that's a different color because that's marzipan or something like that.
Oh, okay. The rest of them are real worms.
Yeah. Look, they've set up the Venetian blinds for the Godfather scene in front of the window.
Yeah.
This is a lovely sort of...
That's what that is, too.
Giant Lazy Susan he's got going on here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a multi-level. Yeah, see, the other thing is, if this had been a Federation station, it's not just that we wouldn't have had Quark necessarily or whatever. Oh, my God. He
literally bit the head off of a beetle.
That's awesome. But the visuals would have been much more boring. That's, you know, look at what Voyager looks like, or even the Enterprise. You know, those corridors are terribly boring. And, like, you know, I complain about the lack of reflective surfaces here, but each kind of close-up has little interesting details in the background for kind of no reason, which is something we just couldn't have had. And like round windows and all of that sort of stuff,
I think
would never have had
that. DS9's got sort of like more practical lighting in the set than any other 90s shows, isn't it?
Absolutely. So yeah.
If they want to, they can light it in really interesting ways. Sometimes they don't.
Yeah. No. Yeah, that's right. But here, I think it looks really good.
There's a line in a minute that makes me crack up every single time, because it was like when I first watched it, I was like, oh, I wish my mum would say this to me, where he goes, and go to your room and no studying.
Yeah, no, that's great, isn't it?
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Oh, see, look. See, Zek doesn't love his large adult son.
No, he's so grotesque, isn't he? He's given this toothpick now, and we literally see him picking worms out of his teeth.
Yeah, it's really great, isn't it? It's really getting into it. Don't they have a grinder? Like at some point, there's a grinder thing that Ferengi have to sharpen their teeth.
Because Worf, when Nog goes off to Starfleet Academy, he sells all of his possessions, and Worf buys it and goes, "Ooh, how much?"
And we see him have a go of it on his own teeth.
Here we go. Yeah, go to your room and no studying. I think Ira Bear, like Ron Moore, can turn a phrase. Like, he can turn a comedy line, and this has got some gems in it.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there are some really funny bits. Like, when he dies, when the Nagus dies, they say it's a like infection of the tympanic membrane or something, which is your eardrum, because they're Frankies and they have big fucking ears, and that's the thing. So an eardrum infection's fatal.
Can I tell you something about that scene, right? Because one of my exes was a Star Trek fan, and we watched DS9 through together, and every time I found him too boring, I fell into one of those trances, like, oh.
the Nagus.
It's such a low key effort death. I love it. But it's in a comedy episode, so you can kind of just go with it, you know?
Yeah. It has to be silly. We have to, I mean, they're not going to care anyway, but it has to be kind of silly.
See, now Quark's intrigued because he needs his services as a host for this fantastic conference that's going to occur. I think Kira says something racist now as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it's
lock up silverware. Yeah. It's not great, is it?
And Dax does as well. Like, there's a very strange scene with Dax, which I'm looking forward to commenting on, but I just thought
of
that.
I do love the fact, as they go along, she immerses herself in Ferengi culture and then some, doesn't she?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because of course she does. But they haven't quite nailed her yet.
Can I just say the amount of ham that is served up in this conference scene? I think there's something like, I'm assuming it's quoted as saying that, that they were all wearing their makeup and no one knew who anyone was. It was at a point where no one was used to anyone's makeup. So everyone's, oh, poor Morn, look, gonna go away.
It's his bar. What's he gonna do? He's finished work. He has to go. That's terrible.
I mean, it's more the best long-term like visual gag. I just think he's great.
He is really good.
And they just don't forget him. Rob, he's in like the second to last scene in DS9. Brilliant. Oh, this fella, look. he's the dangerous assassin Ferengi, you know?
Oh, okay. Right.
Well, he says to Quark later, doesn't he? You know, like,
yeah.
I'll protect you. You're going to need it.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, here we go. I do. Don't you just love the fact, though, that they have... I mean, they haven't put the thought into making a massive plan for the Ferengi, but just the fact that the wormhole exists, they're like, right, something to exploit.
Yeah. No, it's a very sort of easy thing. Later on, they have to come up with plans, but the wormholes just appeared. And so it's like, all right, the Ferengi are here. Obviously, they're looking for new markets.
This is the beginning of the sealing of the Dominion War, because them going into the Gamma Quadrant in the second season.
They meet the Dominion, don't they?
No, they get. So they meet the Dozai, the terrible makeup Dozai, in this bizarre
scale.
Bizarre sort of gay sex comedy episode. It's very strange. Do you remember that one where the woman is dressing up as a man? Hawk thinks the man's coming on to him and has lots of gay panic. It ain't great. But in the negotiations, the Dominion is mentioned. But it's kind of seeded here for them to go there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, look how little Jake is. He's such a baby. Isn't that funny?
You know what's amazing as well is right up to the point of Aaron Eisenberg's death, they were the best of friends, these two. And they started that podcast together, didn't they?
The podcast, yeah.
Which Aaron Eisenberg's wife is still a part of.
Oh, okay.
It's really lovely. It's sometimes so behind Aaron the scenes Eisenberg stuff makes me smile.
Isn't a child, is he, at this point? He's an adult. Yeah, he's just a short person.
I think, and I think because, you know, he wasn't sort of your standard-looking actor, he didn't get the sort of parts that he wanted to get. But boy, did he get some opportunities in this show.
Yeah, he's really good. He really is great.
I love the fact that they're so devious, the Ferengi, that everywhere they've been now, their reputation is tarnished. And they're so excited about the fact they can go somewhere and con a load of people where no one knows who they are.
Is this the makeup that we end up with? Because Wallace Shawn is having real difficulty looking out through the holes in that mask.
Nathan, I'll be honest with you. I can't see too much difference between Wallace Shawn and Jennifer Lien in last week's episode. Do you know?
Jeez, that was some latex, wasn't it? These shows are so weird. I mean, like, look at this. It's an entire room full of people wearing this stupid outfit. It's so funny.
Imagine if you nonsense. Was like, I want to watch stuff. Yeah. Switched on it. Oh, listen, best of all, no one has ever heard the name Ferengi. Our reputation will be stainless.
I think we see these teeth over and over again in the future. Like, I think they just, like, I'm sure that Brunt's teeth are in there somewhere, you know, like, we do reuse these costumes.
I feel like these are all like classic theatrical actors. They are truly giving it some, aren't they?
I didn't remember to look it up, and I might do it afterwards, because there are people that I kind of recognize as that guys from American TV. So I think
they must, you know, love doing something quirky like this, you know, slap a bit of latex on and ham it up.
That line, I'm just not as greedy as I used to be. It's so great.
No, I like it when he says, "What's it? I'm old. The fire dims." You know? And what's even better is Quark's reaction when he says his name. He spits his tongue out, doesn't he?
The new brand Negus. Quark!
Here we go. He's milking the moment.
And they're all appalled and then realise they've all got to suck up to him because this is really happening. Like throwing their chairs all over the place. Oh, I love it.
This is ridiculous.
But it's making us laugh, isn't it?
Yeah. No. It's good ridiculous. He's
delivering it this side as well. When he goes, I'm sure you'll do a wonderful job.
I just love his delivery, Wallace Shawn.
Yeah. Oh, he's terrific.
The thing I know most from is Toy Story, when he's that dinosaur.
Oh, yes, of course he is.
I remember being in the cinema going, that's the Grand Nagus. Yeah. Ooh, Jake's got a thing about oatmeal, you know. He has oatmeal a lot.
So awful. Awful. It's something you can play with rather than eat if you have to do another take.
And there's one episode where he has a Coca-Cola, right, or a fizzy drink, yeah, and he has his peppermint bread, and he puts the bread in the Coke, and it makes it froth all over the place. Sisko looks appropriately appalled.
So this, like, I really like this scene. Like, I don't know.
What, the fact that he's explaining why he's frustrated and Sisko's empathizing? No, Sisko's not really empathizing, is he? He's kind of sometimes this just doesn't work.
Yeah, usually they don't. But it's the thing, I can't remember whether we already knew. Did we already know that Nog can't read?
No.
So he hasn't done his homework, and O'Brien thinks that that's because he's naughty, and then he does the class clown thing of saying that a Vulcan stole it because they have no ethics, which is pretty funny. And then I thought here it was spoiling it slightly. It was spoiling the reveal at the end by saying that Nog can't read. He can't even read. But I don't think it does that. I think if you've not seen this, because I really, really, really remember this episode and particularly this B plot really well. So I don't think it does spoil it. And so it also places it as it's not just I want to hang out with my disreputable friend. It's like my friend is being denied opportunities and I like him and, you know, like, there's already the hint there to us that he's a good boy. Like, he's a good boy. And that's the scary thing.
That's the key of the best reveals, though, isn't it? Is where the hints are there. But actually, I didn't join the docs. I figured they'd be off. He says, you know, looking at anti-grav things. At one point in this, they're looking at Vulcan's arse who's walking past. Yeah. I've never felt like, I'm like, that's real characters there. You know, they're watching someone walk past and admiring them. And it's so gorgeous, that ending. And Sisko, it's he doesn't say anything. He's just there in the shadows.
He just leaves.
Admiring his son, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing, the parenthood thing, isn't it? Because, like, you bring kids up, but you can't make them turn out good. You know, you do what you can, but kids are kids. They're separate people. And that fear, you know, like you've got O'Brien saying he's hanging around with the naughty boy in the school. You know, you should put a stop to that. And he says, I trust him. You know, I trust him. And it turns out he's right to trust
him. I did like, though, that he didn't in that scene basically say, I don't want you to see him. He says, sometimes this doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Because he could have exploited that moment, you know.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what? I really liked, you're going to laugh at me now, because when I talk about 90s Trek execution, I realized how this was, because it's very dark, this room, and they're in silhouette a little bit. Yeah. And the camera moves in around because Zek has to be right in front of the camera to make that joke about him falling into the trance work. Yeah. And it's great. Yeah.
So that's him doing it there. And he's just been thinking about porn, hasn't he? Or like where he's going to go to get his end away in his retirement or something. And now he's dead.
Oh, dear God. It's so bloody stupid. I love it. And I liked how economic the storytelling was here as well. We go straight to the funeral. Like,
yeah. Look, that American fabulous thing where you have a giant photo and he's looking really and cross at everyone.
So dignified, doesn't he?
He just looks like he's got the shits with everyone. I think really cross.
Some of the Ferengi culture, I'm like, oh, that's a little dodgy, you know, the sexism and all that. But some of it, especially the vacuum form,
the freeze dried,
I think that's dead genius. Guy.
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it?
What is it? It's my piece of Zek.
And Odo just says deadpan, how touching.
Well, don't they want to do an autopsy on him? And then they discover that that's him there in the little piles of plastic things.
Yeah. Oh, so hang on, who is that then? If the Negus is still alive, who are they selling?
Oh, just, you know, some guy. Some guy random walked past his quarters.
Oh, don't Quark. Here we go. Magic is about to happen. Quite exactly overcome with grief, are we?
Oh, goodness.
That scepter, you know, that scepter does the rounds a bit.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a prop that stays with us for the next 7 years.
When Zek visits the station in series two, Sisko actually does kiss it. No, he's good with relations with other cultures.
Yeah. Well, he's all over Kai Winn and she's horrible. Yeah, that my father thing, it's so Eric Trump. Every time he talks about my father, that's all I can hear.
And how he's totally emasculated at the end where he's I was going to seize power, I promise.
You're a terrible son.
It's like talking to a Klingon.
Casual clothes.
No, but I love them hanging at this corner, which they do for three seasons.
Yeah.
And what's so funny is once he goes off to Starfleet, they walk away and then they just look at the empty corner. It's really sweet. Mm. And then later on, Odo says to Jake, well, I was never chasing you away. I was chasing Nog away. You know?
Yeah. Well, there you go. Oh, look. Oh, bless.
There's an innocence to this, isn't there?
That it really is.
Usually and associate with DS9.
No, but I don't know. Like, Deep Space Nine does valorize friendship and particularly friendship between men, I think. And I, you know, that's nice. And that little thing, like when you're a kid, like your friends, like there's your parents, obviously, but your friends and your best friends, like that's so important. You know, you don't have partners, you don't have anything like that. Maybe you have a girlfriend or whatever, but like that relationship, I just think is so sweet. And so
many
important.
Different types of friendships as well, aren't there? Yeah. Like Odo and Quark, that is absolutely a friendship.
Yeah.
They'll never acknowledge it, but that episode where Odo smashes up his quarters.
Oh, look at this drone. So the drone has ears like a Ferengi. Like the drone goes past the window.
And I swear to God, you can see the string, you know.
I reckon that's CG. I reckon they've matted that in. I don't think anything on a string is going to move that quick. And
this
looks
scene through the wall
like
panel that's
effect.
Been destroyed. This is the only scene, the only concession to a Star Trek episode, isn't it? Where they talk a bit of technobabble.
Yeah. He's got his tricorder out, doesn't he?
But so go back to friendships very quickly. You've got O'Brien and Bashir, you've got Sisko and Dax, you know, and all of these friendships, I can list tons. They all pay off in the later seasons in lots of different ways. Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that in the end, Bashir says to O'Brien, you know, I love people, but I love you more, O'Brien. He's basically saying he's in love with him.
Yeah. Oh, so wait a sec. What are we doing here? Why is he in the thing?
No, it's because
because he got nearly blown up.
Oh, Rom popping up, look. It's Grand Negus Quark, actually. And I think until the twist is revealed, we're supposed to think, because he's so downtrodden, that Rom would never have the cojones to try and kill Quark.
And do you know what? Rewatching it, because I remembered the B plot really well, but not the A plot as well. And so watching it, when it's revealed that Rom is part of the plot, initially I thought that he was kind of going along with him, hoping to save his brother or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like that it wasn't real. And then I thought, oh, this is maybe season one Rom, and this isn't where Rom actually ends up being eventually. And I guess that's what's happened. But I love the way that Quark reacts to it. And I think it's a classic sitcom moment.
I like the bit where Rom presses his nose up to the airlock. Roms, nice name for a bar, don't you think? But the payoff to all of that it's Quark's reaction in the last scene. I didn't think you had the nuts. I'm going to get your drink.
That's exactly it. So it reminds me of the sitcom, right, where you've got a couple and the mother of one of them is coming over to stay. And for various reasons, they have to concoct this elaborate lie about some important thing. And the lie, the whole episode is about them maintaining the lie. And then the lie gets busted and the mother finds out about it. And then she says, oh, well, you know, I'm just touched that you thought it was worth going to all that trouble just for me and that it gets forgiven. And that's what I thought this was. It's like, yes, you tried to kill me and all of that, but I'm touched by how you went to so much trouble just to get rid of me.
What I took from that was that Ira Bear is always going to write Quark and Rom as Ferengis, and that's how Ferengis would react. Oh, you tried to kill me to take my bar. I'm so proud of you.
But I think it is just absolute classic sitcom reaction, you know, like a standard Nathan, sitcom reaction.
This is a Godfather scene now.
Yeah.
And yet now you call me Negus as he strokes his strange vole-like creature.
Oh, look. Jesus
So
Christ.
Do you know, so as a joke, they cut in the Godfather theme when the Rushes came in and they presented it to Iris Stephen Bear. And he's like, no, are we really doing this? As
if they're going to broadcast if they were.
I mean.
Has he got a puppet there?
Yeah,
is he striking a puppet?
It's a vole.
Oh, that's the vole. That's what voles look like.
It's a Cardassian vole because you see a dreadful one later on in series three.
Look at it. My God, look at it. It's so shit. That's wonderful. Star Trek should have more puppets. I'm always here for puppets in Star Trek. Absolutely do puppets. And so Cardassian voles are constantly chewing through the wires and stuff on this station, aren't they? Like they're a thing. They're rats, right?
There's one where Quark comes running into Ops and runs up to O'Brien holding it and goes, it ran right across a double table.
Silly.
The whole sort of comic pace of this scene where it's like, now you call me Negus. I'll split it with you 50-50. Well, I hope they've got a taste for Sinferhole then. Apparently, all you need to do to succeed as the Grand Negus is hand out all these choice assignments to people.
Yeah. Just, the guy comes up with the idea and you just say, I'll have 50% of that. Thanks. Yes, you can do it. Sounds like a good deal to me.
Did you see that line you had there? I empathize with him a lot. He went, oh, this benevolence wearies me. Honestly, that's how I live my life. This is it. The reveal.
This is it. Eric Trump is coming up with a new plan, which is to kill Quark. So it was them. It was them. They did the locator bomb. And here it is, like, it really is Rom's going to kill his brother. And obviously season 7 Rom would never do that. And so they retool the character at some point.
Did you notice there was a moment there between two actors? Because Max Grodnick is milking how long he's going to take to say all those lines. Yeah. And the other guy is kind of going... He's using his hands to say, come on, to it's kill my dear brother, you know. And then he pats him on the back as if to say, well done, you got it out, well done.
So this is a scene with Dax where Dax is being kind of racist and kind of, maybe not, maybe
series one Dax, remember, they retooled her in two as well.
Yeah. I actually think she's, it's a little bit weird. I guess if she's an old guy, having a sort of conservative approach to parenting. But later on we find out he was a bit of a rake, or at least
I think initially the concept of Dax was that she was going to be the old man in the young man's body, and they realized this wasn't working. So that's why they turned her into a good time girl in series two.
Well, yeah, someone who's sort of so old that she kind of doesn't give a shit, has... a fair amount of chill and wisdom. I love how she, like, did she just tell, she told Ben to go and get her, to go and get his son.
So she could eat the dinner.
That's right.
If she turned she really up at my house the and stew. Ended up eating my dinner.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Stew. Here we go. This is the scene.
Oh, it's so good.
And do you remember when they were trying to teach Uhura in
I mean, it could have been. It could have been agonizing. Yeah,
it's really good, isn't it? Like, what a sweet kid, and like he. Oh,
and I think the payoff with their last scene, where he just calls him over, kisses him, and says, "You're a good kid."
It's beautiful.
How tactile they are.
Look at them, and I'm so glad he doesn't interrupt. It would have been so dreadful if he'd interrupted. And that look at Avery. And it's kind of like, wow, I was a bit of a prick. I said I trusted him. I really, really properly should have trusted him. And, you know, he's good. What a good boy.
You realize what they've done here as well, isn't it? They've reversed what we normally get. Normally, we'll get a very touching or dramatic A plot and a funny B plot.
Yeah.
Here, we've got a massively funny A plot and a really sweet B plot. But I do think in series 1, 2, and 3 of DS9, I would say half the time, the B plots are better than the A plots. There's some cracking ones. The one where Nog wants to join Starfleet Academy, that's a B plot, and it's phenomenally good.
Yeah, like, think about where that goes.
Oh, I feel so sorry for Rom here. He says, "You have so much and I have so little." Yeah. And he says, that's how it should be.
That's right. We're capitalists. Fuck off. I'm not having any
sympathy. That's what's so interesting with their relationship is ultimately that power dynamic completely changes. And Rom ends up with everything at the end of the series. He's a fucking Nagus.
Well, he ends up with the moon and he's Nagus and everything.
Oh, here we go. Oh, there's a dreadful CGI effect in a minute of Odo slipping down into
goop. Oh,
he's
the glass. I love, though, that discovery. I think that is really kind of hilarious. There are 5 glasses, you know, like when he realizes that they've kind of fallen for it. How did they not know that one of the glasses was Odo?
And this is all classic comedy now because we know he's off to be executed. He's saying, "I'm going to take one of the girls with me." They're going, you know, your sheer presence will be enough, you know. It's funny. It's, you know, it's not particularly original, but it's funny.
No. But I mean, it's Star Trek, though.
They when even did Star a comedy. Did you see that? They did a comedy sigh of, Can you see why people wouldn't like this, though? Like, why people that just don't enjoy fun wouldn't like this?
Yeah. People who hate fun would obviously hate this. But
where's the space anomalies?
Yeah. Look. Oh, yeah, that is pretty terrible, isn't it? Oh, what are you going
to
do?
Well, they used him quite a bit as a shapeshifter in those early years.
Yeah. It was always the sort of high concept thing where they would eventually go, actually, Renee's fine, we'll just get him to be Renee and we don't need to do all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they put goo on his face and things like that. It's a bit extreme.
Yeah, yuck. Please don't.
We're in an airlock here. Are you sure there's not a reflective surface in this window?
Well, sort of. Yeah, there you go. Look, there's lights reflecting off that.
Oh, there you go.
Perspex there.
Perspex. I love how David Livingstone is shooting from their POVs. That's lovely.
Yeah.
Now look, they threaten this all the way through DS9 being shoved out of an airlock. We hear it all the time. Yeah. So it's nice to actually see it happening.
Yeah. Do you think this is transparent aluminium? I think it probably is.
Transparent aluminum.
Aluminum.
Hello, computer. How do you know he didn't invent the thing?
Look at him pushing his nose up against. That's so great because you can imagine the makeup person saying, "Don't touch the nose to anything. You know, you'll ruin it." But obviously, that was fine. That worked well. Didn't leave.
Did you never hear the story when Kieran Odo snogged in his way at the end, and his whole mouth came away? Now the visitor said it was the least sexy kiss she'd ever had. She had this eggy-smelling latex stuck on her face.
Dear.
Just goes to show they went for it, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This is a great reveal as well, I thought. Really? It would have been a waste had they got rid of him.
Yeah. And I mean, it has to work like this. In retrospect, it absolutely has to work like this. And they would have found some way of bringing him back otherwise because he's so great, but they weren't stupid enough to kill him off in the first place, I think. He failed miserably.
What's a shame is the kind of the last two episodes that he's in is Profit and Lace and The Emperor's New Cloak. And those aren't really great episodes, no, I don't think. You got the intendant literally sitting on his lap saying, have a seat, big boy. You know, like it's...
great.
Although he does turn up in the second to last episode, you know, when he offers the Nagus ship to Rom. And it's that wonderful scene with the static where he's swearing his head off, but the static's bleeping all of his sweat. Oh, here we go. And then everything was running smoothly.
Yeah. It's just, you are a shit son. You are a crappy Ferengi. It's exactly like Donald Trump and Eric. Eric will never get that hug from his father that he so longs for.
But I really want to like the Nagus, because I don't want to think he's Donald Trump. Although I will say, I know this is a comedy episode, so we can let it pass. That is a really shit explanation as to why the Nagus died in inverted commas.
Who cares? Like, no, but yeah. Like, again, it's sitcom logic, isn't it? Like, it's silly.
It's a hand wave. And, you know, usually we wouldn't accept a hand wave. We'd be like, well, this is pretty terrible, but it's a funny episode.
But I mean, that reason, you know, I died to lie low to see what a shitty son you are. And guess what? I was proved right. You're terrible. And, do we have a good son, a good father and son in the B plot?
Stretching a bit there.
It's just a coincidence, I think.
Such treachery deserves a reward.
Yes, that's it. That's it. It's like, I can't believe you went to all this trouble for me.
I'm going to make you assistant manager of policy and clientele. What the hell does that mean?
Yep.
I don't know. I just made it up.
He made it up. Yep.
And Quark never stops treating Rom badly. Like, that's something that never changes. That is their dynamic.
No, he doesn't learn. He doesn't learn and get better. Oh, there's the Klingon babe. See, look, they have ethics. Or maybe they're
I think she's a Vulcan, isn't she?
Sorry, I don't know why I said Klingon.
Mm. Yeah. Do you know, I think those jump jar sticks are probably delicious, you know. It's like maple syrup. It's made from the sap of a tree.
Okay. Mm. Oh, this. Holy crap. So here's another thing too. And it's this, like... just how tactile, like how how Avery's touching his head and kisses his forehead and is now touching his shoulders and stuff.
I believe their father and son.
I do too. I think it's beautiful. You know, did you see Into the Spider-Verse?
I did, yeah. I really thought it was very good.
Do you remember Miles Morales and his father had that really, really kind of warm physical relationship and stuff? Mm-hmm. And some of it ended up being about kind of like black fatherhood and stuff like that. And this, you know, you've got a show, it's really rare to have a black lead in a show. He's got a son. And the way that it depicts their relationship, it's so well judged. It's something that the show gets absolutely right.
When interviewed right from the beginning. Right from the very first episode. But when interviewed post DS9, Avery Brooks said, I gained a son from this show. He is my son. You know, and you know, don't get me wrong, Avery Brooks is a bit gaga and, you know, he's a quirky
crazy
man. But clearly, that was his biggest takeaway from DS9. And actually, for us, it's one of our biggest takeaways from DS9 as well.
Yeah.
That relationship.
I think it's beautiful. One of the best relationships in Star Trek. I really buy it. And I just think it's lovely. And that, you know, like that was a very simple plot as well. And again, sort of operating in a sort of sitcom register, but just heartfelt and stuff. And I've held it together this time, but I did tear up a little bit watching both that scene where he discovers him teaching him to read and then he just leaves. And then that scene there where he hugs him and doesn't tell him why. Like he hugs him, he gives him a kiss, you know, like he's super proud of him, but he doesn't actually say, oh, I was sneaking around trying to work out what terrible thing you were up to.
And then I discovered. We've talked about the characters on DS9, but that is one of the things it just scores really highly on is we spend a lot of time with these characters in the same place. We follow their relationships developing and really touching moments of realization like that hit throughout the entire show. It's a huge strength of DS9 and it's a shame that the other 90s Trek shows actually didn't lean into that a bit more. There's almost like a reset with the characters every week, you know?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, DS9 is the thing that invents serialized Trek, the sort of thing that we get in Discovery now. Mm. And, you know, Discovery has a sort of shifting cast of additional characters, but obviously we haven't had that much time given the number of episodes of Discovery they've been compared to Deep Space Nine. But you can see that even though a Kurtzman Trek hasn't lent heavily on the iconography of Deep Space Nine so far, it does have respect for it, and I think it has learned some lessons about what Star Trek can and should be like from Deep Space Nine. And I think Discovery is kind of hugely indebted to it for the way it's ended up.
Do you know what I find interesting is you and I have done probably 6 or 7 DS9 episodes now. Yeah. 4 of them have been comedies, yeah, and none of them have lent into where the show went in the latter half of its run, like the political drama and the heavy arcs and things like that. Like, if people are just listening to this for their example of what DS9 is like, we are completely misrepresenting it sometimes.
Yeah. So we haven't had, you know, things with Wayoon as a major character or the female shapeshifter. We haven't had, you know, huge
much Dukat,
things with
Damar,
Dukat, Wynn. Yeah.
You know, we've got some really, really good stuff to come.
Look, we did in the Pale Moonlight, and I have to say that I, you know, like, I see why everyone likes it, but it's not the thing that I think of when I think of what's great Deep Space Nine. And I think it's because I'm here for the hang time, basically, and I'm not completely sold on the sort of giant who's fighting who this week.
Yeah. I'm coming to the conclusion that your favorite episodes of DS9 will always be hang time episodes with lots of funny, cute, touching, sweet moments in them.
Yeah. All right, we've reached the end of the episode and it's time for us to work out what we're going to watch next time. And Joe, it's your turn to pick, I think.
Yes, hello. I'm here with my finger poised on the button. As ever, oh no, as ever, sorry. Like last time, I've selected a single series of Star Trek. And I feel as if we haven't watched William Shatner be beautiful and hammy for a long time. So we're going to go back to the original series. We always have fun with it. Don't you think?
We do. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, we do. Well,
so
Spock's
here. Brain. Oh, I had fun with that. I had fun with you with that. Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, I'm not sure what this is. Random Star Trek, the original series episode is season 2, episode 17, A Piece of the Action.
Oh, I think that's, isn't it like 30s Gangster Planet?
Oh, that one's really fun.
That's a really good one, like an absolute classic. Well, you are allowed to pick the first one. Do you know what I was going to do this week?
Go on.
I was also going to pick the original series, and I was just going to say, and we're going to pick the third one that I roll, whatever it is.
but we can pick a piece of the action.
We can pick it.
I've already pressed it again, though. I'm so sorry. I know, and that would have been fun, but actually,
yeah, let's do this.
I want to
we'll
do this
roll
one
it again. You know.
Okay. I want to do this one because you've mentioned this title a couple of times recently and it ties into Strange New Worlds a lot as well.
Okay.
It's season 2, episode 1, A Mock Time.
Awesome. So it's T'Pring and Ston and Spock and all of our old
favourites. All those
favorites
people we were hanging out
Strange
with a few weeks
Worlds.
Ago. Yeah. Come on. There'd be plenty to say about that one, wouldn't there?
Yeah. You do know that that in an episode of Strange New World, they quote that musical that musical cue. So we'll have that musical cue and everything. It's awesome.
Can I let
That's
you into a secret?
Great. What's that?
I've never seen A Mock Time.
Oh, okay. Well, you will know the musical cue that I'm thinking of when you hear it because it is pretty fucking incredible.
I mean, this is a popular episode, isn't it? This is a really popular original series episode.
Yeah, yeah. That means that 2 weeks ago you didn't get my joke about Spock throwing Plomeek soup at Christine.
I mean, I average 5 out of 10 of getting your joke. So, you know.
Okay, fair enough.
They're usually too smart for me, you know?
No, this was just a reference. This was the Lower Decks writers would have thought it was too obvious.
Well, let's watch it and then you can tell me the joke again.
All right. Okay. All right. Right, fantastic. Yep.
Are we heading to Vulcan then? Is that right?
Yeah, we are.
Let's do it.
It's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
Listening to Untitled Star Trek Project with Joe Ford and Nathan Bottomley. We're online at untitledstartrekproject.com, where you can find links to our Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube channel. Our podcast artwork is by Kayla Ciceron, and the theme was composed by Cameron Lamb. This episode was recorded on the 15th of August 2022 and released on the 26th of August. We'll see you next time for Star Trek The Original Series, Amok Time.
Okay. Let me grab my phone quickly. Oh, I get roasting in here. I say that every time. I know I do. I know.
You're telling me that to apologize for the fact that you're in your pants again. Oh, you can't hear me.
Oh.
You'll listen back to this, though.
Huh?
No, it's roasting in here. I took as code for when I get up to get my phone,
I'll see that.
I'm just in my pants.
Yeah, I very often am. Don't worry. I did a whole one with a practical stranger the other day, and I had to keep doing this every time I got up. Well, don't bother with you.
No, that's fine.
Okay. All right, original series, let me get it up.